Hello, folks. Before we begin tonight, we need to address a pressing issue that has been on the Pride of Detroit family. I have a statement here I'd like to read from Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock god. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan_POD. Ryan has unfortunately lost his streak. The streak is over. Much like The Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania 30, much like UConn's streak of a UConn women's basketball team streak was ended this past weekend. It's over. He has a statement prepared. It is with deep regret that I cannot be here for recording of the POD cast. As it stands, this is the only the second recording of the show I've missed. And to those of you who listen each week, this is 100% the fault of AT&T. Please forward all hate mail and bad reviews towards them for flubbing my internet installation. However, do not fret my absence, because next week I'll make my return to the best Lions POD cast available on the internets. WrestleMania was last night, so it might be best for the best that Chris and I aren't going to share airspace for an hour. Watch the first episode of Rick and Morty Season 3, watch wrestling, and get ready for the NFL draft that's less than a month away by listening to the informed, math-centric opinions of my dude Kent Platt. He got me into training camp last year, so he's a real one. As for Mike Payton, his poor taste in films about Detroit will continue to hold him back in life. See you next week, POD fam. Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast. We're back here, in the driver's seat, in your face, spitting your enemy's eye, rooster tails, all the rest. We come here every week to talk about the Detroit Lions of the NFL and anything else that entices the Pride of Detroit family. PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. You know where to find us. Check out the show on iTunes and Stitcher and any other RSS streaming service you might have. We have a different cast in here tonight. We had, as you just heard, Ryan Matthews prepared a statement. He is not here. He has finally lost his streak. Alex Reno is not here. We tried to get him coming in, but he too had stuff going on. Jeremy Reisman is still loyal to the cause, the fearless leader at Detroit Online.
Still got no life.
You're taking over the streak from Ryan, so this is very ominous.
I mean, rightful king is at top, right?
We'll see.
For now.
For now, and that new voice right there is Kent Lee Platt at Math Bomb, who we had to call in on an emergency. And Kent, how are you doing?
Fantastic. Glad to be on.
First appearance, am I right?
This is first appearance. Awesome. You guys heard me rambling on the Lions one.
Pretty much. Mike Payton was also going to be here tonight, but unfortunately we could not get his connection to work. So it's just the three of us, but that's fine. Let's get going. It is April 3rd. We are on the road to WrestleMania once again.
No, we aren't. Shut up.
Yes, we are always on the road to WrestleMania.
We are on the road away.
We are on the road to the NFL draft. And we have plenty to talk about. We're going to be talking about the draft this week, including options, more the outlook of, once again, linebackers. It's a story everyone can't talk about. We're going to be talking about the future. The Lions did sign another depth linebacker, but it still looks to be that they're going to be taking linebacker very early in the draft. We're going to talk with Kent Platt about that later in the show. We're going to start with some news off the top, though. Where do you want to start? Let's start with Gunther Cunningham, shall we?
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite German. You could always hear it come out of him whenever he was yelling at the players. He'd get a little bit going when he got that angry voice.
That will be sorely missed, the shouting in German. I don't know if he actually shouted in German. He did dropkick playbooks, though.
Did.
I don't know. That is going to be sorely missed.
When you're shouting in general, it sounds a little bit German, no matter what language you're doing it in. That's the crossover for German is just shouting.
Yeah, pretty much. Everything does kind of sound shouting. It's a weird language like that, but hey, you know, you do what you do. He is moving to Pro Football Focus. We have had our ups and downs with PFF, but we wish Gunther the best. I noticed this, like, going through his thing, like, you would not think this, like, he looks an old man, but you don't really think of too many guys when you look at that and say, yeah, that guy's been coaching football for 50 years.
Yeah, I guess, like, I mean, I'm just shocked at this point that he's, like, this is the last person I would expect to be on, like, the cutting edge of statistical analysis, if we can call what Pro Football Focus does that, but...
I mean, it's definitely an in-depth look into the game. Like, no matter what your personal feelings of PFF are, it's not just taking a box score.
Yeah, he's always come across as, like, that brass, angry type of guy. You know, when he's out on the field, he's very, very hot-tempered and very, very forceful and fierce with his stuff. You never really think, oh, that guy's into math. But when you really think about it on a deeper level, you know, we know that Belichick and his guys are into analytics, even though they deny it and pretend like they're not. We know that they are. So seeing somebody like him and eventually finding out, it's weird at first, but then you kind of think about it a little bit more. It makes a little bit more sense. He's fun to listen to if you ever watch his interviews when he talks about it, though. Again, that might just be the accent, though.
Yeah, and I know, like, after he lost his defensive coordinator position, after Jim Schwartz got the boot and he was retained by Jim Caldwell, didn't he get moved over to basically special projects? That was basically his role with the Lions for the past 2-3 seasons has been analytics related projects.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, he's kind of got one of those vague job titles that you're never quite sure what he's doing back there, but you're kind of glad he's there.
The Randy Edsall special.
Yes, exactly. And so I guess what's also curious about this to me is I'm not sure what's in it for him. Like, why is he interested in moving over to Pro Football Focus instead of... I guess maybe he's just not happy that he doesn't have enough on his plate with Detroit?
He's been coaching 50 years.
Maybe he needs less stress.
I guess, yeah.
That too, but I mean, again, he's been coaching 50 years. I'm sure at this point it's like, yeah, I could kind of really use a change of scenery.
I don't know, though. There's probably a lot of clipboards that he can kick there.
Probably. Plenty of interns and number monkeys that he can just yell at too in German.
Yeah, and I'm assuming his job at Pro Football Focus is just kind of to bring the football knowledge, because they always kind of have the stigma that it's just kind of a bunch of, you know, amateurs essentially analyzing tape, right, when they haven't really been part of the league. Even though Chris Collinsworth is the guy who owns it, Gunther Cunningham is definitely going to bring them a sense of legitimacy to the group.
Is that weird to keep thinking of Chris Collinsworth as like the CEO of Pro Football Focus? Does that ever strike you as being like, okay, that's I did not see that.
It is pretty weird.
He's an interesting guy. I don't know what I think about him. I mean, I love him on Sunday Night Football, but he's a weird guy. I can't put it any other way. He's just kind of a weird guy.
Do you kind of worry about that, though? Like, the fact that we've now got the guy whose color for Sunday Night Football is now the CEO of a company that basically is trying to, like, it's like every time, you know, the NFL pushes next-gen stats on all their broadcasts, because they're the ones putting out those next-gen stats. Now it's Chris Collinsworth. He'd be able to just, you know, throw out Pro Football Focus as much as he wants.
I'm all for it, as long as it's the actually important and interesting stuff, like coverage stats and things like that. And, you know, as long as they're not throwing out, oh, he's an 82 and the other guy's a 43. As long as they're not pulling that crap out, I'm fine with it. Throw out those yeah, advanced stats they have. Those are actually interesting and worth hearing about.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I can get behind that.
And I definitely prefer them throwing advanced stats out there rather than like Matthew Stafford is 2-15 when it's raining outside on Thursday night games.
Oh, they'll still do that. It's Chris Collinsworth. It's Chris Collinsworth. Like, I wish I could do his voice, but he has a very unique voice. I love doing it. But let's see, what else do we have here on the news? As we saw, the Lions jerseys kind of, sort of, semi-leaked. Not quite. I'm not sure those are the actual jerseys, but we'll have to see. It's very soon, and we're going to be reacting to jerseys probably in 2 podcasts, I believe.
Yep, the 13th is when they drop officially.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, so that's about 10 days from when we're recording. Like you said, that you can't quite get an idea of what... I mean, you get a little bit of an idea of what they look like. I think the most interesting part of this semi-reveal is that they'll have the word Lions on their shoulder pads there. like on the side.
Yeah, that's like a new thing that a bunch of teams do, though. Like,
it's interesting. I that's something that I'll have to get used to if that's what it actually is. It doesn't really look right to me at the moment, but I don't know. I don't quite get hung up in all this jersey hype that everyone else does. Are you guys into it at all? Are you guys excited for the 13th?
I'm for it. I don't know if you guys remember, but I've been calling for silver jerseys for like ever. I'm very excited for it. I've been waiting for those silver jerseys. I'm trying to find those knockoffs that don't look like crap, and you can't. Now we're going to have official ones. So I'm excited for it. I'm hoping that they are exactly what they say that they are. I'm actually not that big of a fan of the new blue. You know, it was all right when we seen on the logos and stuff, but it looks a little off. And it could have just been the poor picture quality. But I'm less excited about the blue ones than I am that silver uniform.
I think that is the picture quality, because it was a dark image and someone just jacked the saturation up. I don't think that's going to look like that particular blue. It's going to be the old blue. They're not switching off from Honolulu blue. They're not changing that sauce up. I kind of find it funny that they never got to use those black color rush, though.
Right.
They had Eric Ebron. That's so disrespectful, Eric Ebron. It's like, hey, pose in these. We're never going to use these.
They sure as hell sold them, though.
I guess. I never got one. I didn't even see when they went up. I would have loved to have one for, like, Golden Tate or some shit.
They never even had any for Eric Ebron. That was just his old UNC uniform that they had.
I
think I'm with you, though, Ken. The silver ones, that's kind of the only one I'm really interested in, just because I want to see what it looks like. There really isn't an all-silver uniform out there, except maybe, I mean, obviously there's probably some in college, some team just trying to jack up excitement for their team, but it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see if they actually wear them this year, which I suppose they might, but again, they don't really have the traditional Thursday night games on their schedule because they have the Thanksgiving games, but I guess there's a chance they could wear them on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we could do that. Absolutely could do that. All right, and then finally, last note here I have before we move on here. NFL owners meetings have been going around. Jeremy, can you give us the breakdown on some of the new rules that we seen out of the owners meetings?
Yeah, there wasn't anything too exciting. There were a lot of kind of like little things that most people don't really care about. But the most interesting things, I would say, is now they're doing essentially a centralized review like they do in hockey, where no more going under the hood at the sidelines. I think they have they're going to have a tablet and headphones essentially, and just like listening to some guy in a central location going over replays with them. Which I think everyone can agree that's probably a good move. You want to get the sort of thing. You want to get it so that everyone is on the same page, and so that'll eliminate, I guess, more subjective calls when the same people are ruling on all these plays. And then the other one, which I'm not quite as much in favor, is the leaping over the line on field goals is now illegal. That is no longer allowed. And the NFL is claiming safety. And I guess this rule is also potentially proposed by some players. But I don't know. Do you guys have any strong feeling on the field goal thing?
Seems like that's a relatively new thing. I mean, we haven't really, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, we didn't have guys jumping over the line every play, and it seems like we had a whole bunch of them last year.
And yeah, jumping over the line was like a Sports Center kind of top 10 highlight if you pulled it off. Yeah,
I think 8 out of 10 of them were probably Troy Polamalu back in the day,
and then pretty much, yeah.
Now there's like 30 of them.
Well, I don't mind it just because I understand that's kind of a safety hazard. Like if you're jumping over a guy, there's a good chance, like if you botch it, you're going to come down on either on his spine or on his leg. So I'm okay with it. I'm more curious about the centralized review, just because like from how it was sold originally, it felt like Dean Blandino heavy, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. Like I'd like the Dean Blandino part of the equation is what's going to hold me up entirely.
You don't want his finger on the button?
I kind of don't. And you know what? Like, it's good that they're finally going to centralized review, but we have to see, because sometimes just because you're going to centralized review, it doesn't make it that fast. Like, we've seen in Major League Baseball, they finally instituted review, and sometimes it still takes them a good long while to get that stuff sorted. So we'll have to see. Like, the only thing it really reduces is just, again, the crew on the ground and their error.
Yeah, I think I'd be willing to trade off speed for consistency. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue in terms of speed. It might slow it down and whatever, but if we're getting consistency, that's fine. How many times a year are we looking at almost identical catches and one's ruled incomplete and one's ruled complete?
Sure, but then how many times does Dean Blandino then go on Twitter or ESPN or whatever and defend the ruling of the team on the ground?
But he's not fooling anybody. We all see what we see.
Maybe, I guess, but I'm just saying, like, is that Dean Blandino carrying water for his guys, or is that what he actually believes?
You never really know.
I just want a new head of officiating in here, that's all.
The little things.
Yes.
I would actually take Mike Pereira back.
Oh, yeah.
In a heartbeat. Are you kidding me? Yeah. That guy's amazing.
I can't believe we just got three people in the room to say that Mike Pereira is better than our current guy. Because he's the originator of process of the catch.
Yep. You know what we should do is we should get Ed Hockley in there. It'll take 45 minutes for every review.
Oh, Jesus.
And another 45 for his.
He will explain it. What will happen is you put put Ed Hockley in there. He will come on the Jumbotron instead of the official on the field, and he will give the explanation of the call. And it will take us an hour.
Every time, every play will be a smaller shirt.
Pretty much. Ken, this is just for you, just to gauge where you are, because, again, you're new to the show, but I need to figure out where you stand on this. How long do you think it would take for Ed Hockley to get to WrestleMania?
I don't know. Are they going to throw him right into the tournament style or something?
No, kind of like when Gronk was doing over the weekend, where he's, like, ringside and interferes with the match.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened already. Do they still do those guest referee things? You could have him in a heartbeat. He's instantly recognizable. Everybody knows who he is.
He'd be a great guest referee.
Oh, yeah. Throw him out there.
He's got higher standards than that.
Yeah,
no, he doesn't. Apparently. Money talks. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, it's time to dive into the draft. We're on the road to the NFL draft. We're on the road to Philadelphia and all that fun entailed. And we're also on the road again to WrestleMania. So, but I'm just saying that just to piss off Jeremy. We unfortunately, because we don't have Ryan here, no wrestling talk. So thank your lucky stars or whatever. We did have a lot of thoughts, but we're going to talk the draft instead. So hang around. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along, and we're going to be talking about the draft today because it is very close. We're less than a month out. We are going to sit down and talk about the draft, and we brought Kent Lee Platt at MathBomb on Twitter along for this one because we've been wanting to do this for a while. He has come up with his own system here. He kind of grades out a lot of what goes on at the pro days and the combines, all the measurables you can ask for from the big draft prospects out there, and he can kind of combines it. He has a system called RAS. So if you just want to give a little background on it here, Ken.
Exactly. Yeah, it rates all their measurements on a 0 to 10 scale against their position group. And then it compiles all that into a final score, which is also put on a 0 to 10 scale against that position.
All right, cool. Yeah. I just wanted to, give a little background on that because we are going to be referring to RAS a little bit here. And as we talk about these draft prospects. Now, the one bit of news we did have on the Lions, though, was there was another linebacker signed. I believe his name's Nick Ballore.
That sounds right to me. I can't say I've ever heard his name said out loud, so I can't be for sure. I'm not a Central Michigan.
He's on the roster now. He is absolutely not the answer. He's not really going to be, probably filling in any sort of starting role, which once again leaves the Lions really looking for answers when it comes to what's going to happen in the draft because of the linebacker. And it feels like, again, linebacker is going to be one of these day one needs. They're going to draft a linebacker, right? Right? Like, we keep asking this, but I'm pretty sure this is what this is.
I don't know. I mean, this Nick Ballore signing is like the Bob Quinn special, right? It's
absolutely.
He's not going to spend a ton on a guy. He's got a ton of special team skills, and he has a little bit of starting experience. So he's essentially exactly what you want in a backup, which is what he's almost certainly going to be. But we'll see him on the field. He's I think he's only missed two games in his entire career, and he's been around for 5 or 6 years. So reliably healthy, which is something the Lions need at linebacker, and special team skills, which is always an added bonus. He could, if the draft doesn't fall their way and the Lions, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Antoine Williams. I've seen on Twitter in the last couple of days, a lot of people think that he actually could compete for a starting spot, but I still have to think linebacker's got to be one of these first or second day targets.
Absolutely. It needs to be. They're so thin there. I mean, they've got essentially one guy who's an adequate starter who wasn't that great last year in Tahir Whitehead. And then behind that, it's a wasteland. I mean, we talked about Pro Football Focus earlier. Whitehead was the lowest rated linebacker in 2016 by Pro Football Focus. In 2015, that was Paul Worrello who we just signed. So I don't know if Gunther set that up before he took off. Maybe he mentioned it before he left. I don't know, but that's not ideal in general.
Yeah, I mean this is where the DeAndre Levy cutting seems kind of weird, because they really have kind of worked themselves into a corner at this point. There are people, like I said before, there are people I think that think that Antoine Williams is set to make a big step this year, and he certainly could be a starter if he's improved as much as some people are hoping he has. But even then, like Antoine Williams and Tahir Whitehead as your two starting linebackers, that's not good. That's okay at best. And so, yeah, I really think they've worked themselves into a corner. Not saying DeAndre Levy was a guy that they should be relying on anyways. I think we all said linebacker was a pretty big need. It was probably behind defensive end at the beginning of free agency. But now it's jumped to the front and everything else is second, because it's linebacker first and foremost.
Well, let's talk about the options then, because I feel like we've mentioned a few names before in the past, but we've never really dove into them. We've never really gotten into the guts of the matter, or why we really like a lot of these guys. So, Kent, do you want to, like, tell us about the best names, the guys who've been really performing the best so well between Pro Day, the Combine, and names that people should really be knowing when it comes to this position?
Sure. You know, straight up linebackers, the top one for most people in this draft is going to be Reuben Foster out of Alabama. And in the beginning of the draft season, it seemed almost impossible that he could even go anywhere near the Lions at 21st overall. You know, he was going top five. At top three, there were some people that had him as their number one player on their board. But the more they started looking into it, you know, he has concussion issues, and his highlight reels are fantastic to watch. They're great. But God, that dude leads with his helmet almost every single play. And knowing that he has concussion issues, maybe he falls. And then he had that issue at the combine where he fought with an orderly or something. You know, maybe he falls all the way down. Maybe that's what happened.
I don't really bang him too much for the combine decision, but you know, the draft can be really dehumanizing sometimes.
Oh, yeah,
I did a little bit of research into him because I put out the question to Pride of Detroit whether you would trade up for any prospect this year. Like, if you had to trade up for a prospect, who would it be? And Reuben Foster is kind of one of those names that has stuck around because, like Kent saying, you know, he's been falling down some draft boards. He might be there at like 14, 15. If the Lions are serious about filling their linebacker need, you know, maybe they could trade up and grab him. But there's also an issue I hear. He's not really a good X and O's guy. He's more of like an instinctual linebacker, which it both has its positives and negatives. Like, you want a guy kind of not thinking too much out there, but he also has to fit a scheme. He has to fit a team. He has to fit a certain role no matter where he goes. They're not just going to stick him out there and say, hey, follow the ball. That's not really how football works in the NFL. But he's an interesting prospect because he is so good at just about everything else.
Absolutely. He's great in coverage. He's good following the run. He's good in pursuit. There really isn't any huge glaring flaw to his game other than health. So it's worth watching if he does fall. If he slips past the Lions at 21, though, that's he could probably keep going all the way out of the first round, which would be surprising. But if we don't take him, then there's something else going on there.
Yeah.
And that would not be good. The exception to that being if somehow Hassan Reddick is there at 21. And I'm sure everybody's already aware of that name. It's been thrown around a lot in the last couple of months, directly linked to the Lions every chance people get. And that's another one. I think the Lions have him very high on their board. They might even have him higher than Foster, to be honest, because they do have Tahir Whitehead at middle linebacker. But if they bring in somebody like Hassan Reddick, that's a guy who's fast. He can run. He can play edge. He can cover. He can do it all as well. And that's also the kind of guy they've been looking at. You know, you have Takaris McKinley from UCLA, a pass rusher who can drop back in linebacker and chase guys, got that speed and that athleticism. You know, if that's the kind of guy they're going after, then that great edge class we keep hearing about, there are guys in that edge class that could fit that role for a lot of different plays and a lot of different packages. So it's more than just looking at straight linebacker. It's looking at a guy that can compete in multiple spots.
So what do you have as far as RAS for those two guys, for Hassan Reddick and Reuben Foster? And is there anyone else you would probably keep your eye on right now for this position? And by the way, I do want to say this out here. Like, the Lions do tend to use a lot of two linebackers, or it's, you know, scratch this part.
Foster doesn't have a score because he didn't measure, and he didn't measure at his pro day either. I guess he was supposed to be having a personal workout with teams at some point where he would do some of the measurements, but I'm not confident we're going to get a score on him because they don't even always report those. Hassan Reddick is well in the 9.9 range. He was at an 8.45 before I put in his splits. And that's already an elite range. That's going to go up once I get his 20-yard split in there. So we're looking at a guy who's already well up into the top 10% athletically at his position, both at defensive end. I think he's actually already over at linebacker. So he's already a great athlete. We know that he can turn and run. We know that he's got great change of direction. He's explosive. You know, that's the type of player that you get athletically when you're looking at him. Another player who's similar athletically also has a very high score that could fit the same scheme and has been talked about getting pushed up into that first round is Tyus Bowser out of Houston. So if Hassan Reddick is off the board and Foster's off the board, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Lions be the one that jumps on Tyus Bowser.
Well, I think that's pretty interesting because I feel like the other linebacker that we've all kind of grown accustomed to seeing in those mock drafts to the Lions is Zach Cunningham. And he's someone who I kind of sense his stock is plummeting right now. Not far, but the hype on him as a first round prospect to me seems to be falling by the wayside. Is that something you agree with, Kent?
Absolutely. And it's weird because I can't figure out why. I know if Alex was here, he would probably give you a million reasons why he's not a big fan of Cunningham. It can't just be the missed tackles because they aren't that glaring. He came in as a 7.54 for Raz, so he's got a good athleticism score. He's got good speed. He's got good agility. He's the type of player that you look for from an athletic and measurable standpoint, and I can't figure out why he's falling down people's boards. I don't really have anything to compare it to. I do know that the Lions, Justin Rogers went out of his way to mention that the Lions did not meet with Zach Cunningham with Zach Cunningham at the Combine, which is weird because teams meet with everybody. I don't know if they
right,
met with him.
Yeah.
I don't know if they met with him at his pro day. I didn't see anything mentioned for that. I don't feel like it's a smokescreen. I don't think they have him rated that highly on his board. That might change if they end up meeting with him in one of their official visits. But it seems like a weird ambivalence to Zach Cunningham compared to what we really expected to see.
Yeah, I agree. And it's weird. I know Reno is definitely hung up on those missed tackles, though. And, you know, he showed me a little bit of film on that. And it does look concerning at times. And I know he's not the only one that feels that way about the missed tackles thing. But I think, yeah, him plummeting is kind of strange to me. And, you know, I haven't done a ton of my own personal research, but that definitely seems to be where he's trending. One of the guys that's trending in the opposite direction, at least in his relationship with the Lions, though, is a guy that we learned met with Detroit last week or so, and that's TJ Watt, which I know Chris is going to get real excited about. if the Lions draft. What are your thoughts on TJ, Kent?
So he's a top 10 athlete as a position. He has a 9.91 RAS, ranked 9 out of 939 qualifying linebackers. So from an athleticism standpoint, there's not a whole lot more you can ask for. I don't think a lot of people expected him to rate that highly when he was coming out of Wisconsin. I think a lot of people expected him to show up well, but not that well. He's a fantastic athlete. I'm not 100% sold on his tape as a first rounder, but it's kind of hard to project him because I don't see he's used the kind of way the Lions will. But again, if they're looking at guys that can run in space, that can rush the passer, can drop into coverage, maybe that's the kind of guy they look for. It'd be weird to project in Austin's defense, but I think it could be used similarly to how they look at Hassan Reddick. I'm not 100% certain yet, though.
Chris, what are your thoughts on TJ Watt?
Look, man, as long as he's not JJ, that's all I care about. I don't want to hear about JJ Watt. I don't want to play the Houston Texans and this be the big brother, little brother thing. Just because he's from the Watt doesn't mean it's not like, you know, just because someone's from the Gronk clan doesn't mean he's actually Gronk. And if TJ is not JJ, that's fine. I don't care. I like whatever. I'll take what I can.
I don't think it's fair for you to compare JJ Watt to Gronk, to be honest.
No, but I'm just saying, but these are like football clans. This kind of stuff tends to happen. We talk a lot about family here.
Well, I mean, one thing you can say about TJ Watt is that he's probably going to bring the same work ethic that JJ Watt is.
Oh, stop.
As much as you hate JJ Watt, you can't deny that that dude works hard.
I don't care about working hard. I don't care about working hard. I just don't. I don't. I don't. I don't. I don't. Listen, I care about what's on the field. If you are very skilled, you don't have a great work ethic, and you're still doing amazing stuff on the field, that's fine to me. If you have a great work ethic and you show that up on the field, that's great for me too. Even if you have both, that's great. If you have neither, that's great. As long as you show up on the field, I don't care about the work ethic. I don't care about that. It's such a bad narrative because we all fetishize it. It's not. Listen. No one like the guy at work who talks about how hard he works, or the one who works way too hard either. Like, I don't care how the sausage is made. As long as it has a result, that's fine. If you want to do the hard work, that's great too. I'm just not going to praise you for it.
Wow, that was an early rage corner, and we got another one coming up around the corner, I hear.
We do have another rage corner coming up, yeah. Let's see, do we have anything else here? Coming up against it, but is there any more something you want to see for the draft talk?
Do you have maybe, if the Lions don't go linebacker in the first two rounds, do you have maybe a second or third day guy that you think is a good fit?
I think they have to. They have to on day one, but... Yeah.
Well, I guess, but I mean, to me, it seems like Bob Quinn doesn't strike me as the guy, kind of guy who works himself into the corner and is going to reach for a linebacker if the one he wants isn't there. So, you know, who knows what happens on draft day? Let's say Hassan Reddick's gone, Zach Cunningham's gone. Maybe they aren't as in love with Ty Spouser or TJ Watt. Who's a guy that they can grab on that second or third day?
So I know Alex had him rated a lot higher than most people will, but Alex Anzalone from Florida is a name that you probably look at. The guy has some great tape. He's an excellent athlete. There's a lot of injury history that you need to go into. He basically had his shoulder sewn back on in 2015. I think he broke his arm or something last year. I'm not really concerned about that. But if teams dig into his medical history and they think that he can play in the NFL without re-injuring that shoulder, that's my target. I'm looking at him probably fourth, fifth round. I think Alex had him as early as the third. Another guy that I'd really consider is Elijah Lee out of Kansas State. I've seen him rated as high as the second round. I don't really think he's going to go that high, not in this draft with all the pass rushers and the cornerbacks that are going to go off the board. But Elijah Lee's another player. He's fast. He's got good size, very explosive. I think he had a 38 vert and a 10'2" broad jump. Both of those are elite numbers for a linebacker. Those are the two big names I'd look for in the mid to later rounds is Alex Anzalone and Elijah Lee.
All right, we'll leave it there. Let's move on. We got a lot more to talk about here on the Pride of Detroit podcast. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along, PODcast, and this is the time of the show where we just kind of sit here and shrug because we're trying to figure out what else to talk about. We could keep doing some more draft stuff, but I don't know where everyone's exhaustion is with the draft yet. This is the time of year where it's like, I don't know where to put the energy for the draft, Kent, because I think everyone's excited to see it happen, but at the same time...
Are we at backup quarterbacks yet? Is that where we're at for draft fatigue?
Might be. Like, I really don't know, because the problem is that there's that, but at the same time, like, I mean, I don't know what the normal sports fan feels, because all I see on Twitter is draft Twitter, and draft Twitter has an endless amount of energy to yell about this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like we're kind of in this purgatory place right now where nothing really new is coming in. We're sure we're getting pro day numbers, but I kind of have a weird relationship with pro day numbers. And we're also still 4 weeks out, so we're not ready to do like draft preview stuff necessarily. So we're just kind of stuck talking the same talking points we've been saying since the combine.
It's name recognition. That's all it is at this point.
Exactly.
Pretty much. What else is around the NFL? I see that Tony Romo is finally up for grabs, but I don't know if anyone's going to match the asking price from Jerry Jones.
Nah.
It's his favorite player. He's not just going to let go for cheap.
I'm terrified to start talking about this because, I don't know, we've had laughs at the expense of the Browns before, and there's a lot of sad teams lining up to try to get Tony Romo.
There.
And of course, 97.1 wants to draft Deshaun Watson.
Of course they do. Why would you want to hold on to Stafford? What has he done? Does he hold any records for Detroit? I don't think so.
Jesus Christ.
No NFL records either. None of them. He's old. He's washed up. He has a weak arm. I don't know.
Coming off his best season.
No. What other crap do they talk about? We didn't get to the hat backwards. That's old news.
He's not a winner?
Yeah. Oh, he's not a winner. Oh, yeah, not a winner. Not a closer, not a finisher, or something like that. I don't even care about Watson. Let's go after what's the other one that's jumping up that nobody thinks should go in the first but will? Davis Webb. That's the one we should get. Forget Watson. He's actually good on the football field.
Patrick Mahomes.
What? Replace Stafford with Stafford.
Pretty much.
Mentioning that, I've been doing draft stuff since about 2008, 2009, and Matthew Stafford has always been my benchmark for biggest arm, you know, the best arm that I've seen. I didn't get to watch Jamarcus Russell. I've watched a few highlights and stuff like that, but I didn't really evaluate him as a player. Pat Mahomes is the first player that I felt comfortably has a bigger arm than Matthew Stafford. And that's crazy, because Stafford is nuts.
I mean, like, I watch a little bit of Texas Tech, but that's very hard to watch. So I didn't watch too much of it, but all I would look at is the box scores from Texas Tech, and I would marvel at like 800 yards from Patrick Mahomes. 800 yards, 7 touchdowns, and Texas Tech would still lose because they have no defense.
Why bother defending anybody? Put everybody on offense.
That just reminds me of the Matt Flynn game.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew Stafford in whatever, 2010?
Yeah. You were talking about stupid box score stats that they do. I think my favorite one ever was in that game because it might have been Collinsworth. One of them came on, they were like, it's the most yards combined by people named Matt in one game.
What the fuck?
like who charts that? They had some poor guy during the game going, I need you to find every game where both quarterbacks were named Matt.
Good Lord.
Just wait till the NFC Championship this year. Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford. Neither team has a defense anymore. It's going to be 1,200 yards between them.
That's going to be a Big 12 game. That's going to be great. All right, let's... okay, we've been kind of getting out a little bit of rage there, but now it's my time. Give me the mic.
Suck my
yelling.
Can you take a break?
Yelling.
Can you take a break?
I'm yelling at you.
Can you take a break?
Yelling.
Can I get get my dick sucked?
Can you hear me yelling?
Can I get my dick sucked?
Yelling, yelling!
Are you ready to suck now? Have you got it all out? You're mad, ain't you?
Stupid!
Red face!
Listen!
Now you're calling me stupid?
Listen! Yes, I am!
This is Kangaroo Court!
You know what? You have a constitutional right to be a dumbass!
All right, he's not here to defend himself tonight, so that's good. Alex Reno. Let's get over here. Let's talk for a second, baby. Let's talk. You stupid idiot. You jabroni. I was having a good day joking around at work. And all of a sudden, here comes the joke ruiner has logged on. Alex Reno in to tell me, hashtag actually, Evanescence is okay. And what happens next is not a bunch of people coming to their senses and once again railing on Alex Reno for yet another awful, terrible, no good take. It's a bunch of people. Well, A, it's a bunch of people just typing, wake me up, can't wake up, because that always happens. This is Reddit. I mean, this is Twitter. The second thing that happened is a bunch of people like, oh, apparently have lost our plot where we're trying to be ironic about most nu metal, but they somehow are applying it to I don't even know what Evanescence is. That is such a weird pop synth metal kind of shit. And all of a sudden people are like, yeah, actually, I like it. You know, I like my Tourniquet. I like that shit. And Alex Reno is the ringleader of all this. Alex, I'm flushing you down the toilet, man. I'm not having this. Not having this. You got me in a bad place. You got me in a really bad place because I care a lot about my music. And you assholes, I could sit here and be fine with Limp Bizkit, not sitting here and being fine with Evanescence.
What is the line that Evanescence has crossed for you?
Everything. I don't know. I was in a very raw place because I learned 89X still plays Evanescence.
They can't possibly play any other song than that one, though, right?
Just that one, but that's all that matters. I don't want to hear it. I never want to hear it. That's like, come on, man. That's like if you had a troubled child and you're suddenly like, they're just going to throw on like Linkin Park Hybrid Theory. No one wants to hear Hybrid Theory anymore. Why are these rock stations like, why is the alt rock station like now stuck 20 years ago?
Because there's no like alternative rock anymore. Like, that's not part of the pop conversation anymore.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, there really isn't. Like, I heard them trying playing like a new hit from Green Day, and it's like, this is shit. I don't want to hear Green Day. They killed themselves as an American Idiot. But Evanescence, I don't want to hear shit from.
Are they even still touring? Are they around anymore?
No, they broke up because the lead singer is weird. She was weird, I think. She has her like own solo. She has her own solo career, and the only reason I know this is because during that conversation, her promotion company Twitter account, Amy Lee promo, it is Amy Lee promo team at EV promo team with 300 followers liked one of the posts, and she has been like, and they are like incessantly replying to people saying that she's not good. It's like, no, she's awesome.
Solid argument.
It is a promo team that just goes around on Twitter going, well, actually, just like Alex Reno tried to do. Just like Alex Reno tried to come in here and ruin my joke. I'm not having this anymore, man.
In Evanescence's defense,
I'm not going to hold on.
They were able to bring Rage Corner back to life.
No, we did it last week, too. There was nothing that needed to be brought back to life.
I was just doing a little pun there.
I know. I don't care.
You just well actually my joke.
No, because this is my joke. I was originally going to rage about Undertaker and Roman Reigns, but unfortunately, Ryan's not here. So if I start talking about it, I'd only have one person here. Actually, that reminds me. Kent.
Yes, sir.
Do you like wrestling?
I watch it occasionally.
Did you watch WrestleMania?
I did not.
Okay.
I think we found Ryan's replacement, guys.
Nope. I feel bad for Ryan that he can't be here. He's got more than just his internet screwed up, but he'll be sure to share it next time.
He's fine.
I was going to talk about the Tigers too, but no opening day.
Postponed. We don't postpone when shit hits the fan.
Do we really need to talk about baseball, though? Do we really need to talk about baseball?
I mean, I'm not going to.
Are the Lions going to be the only Detroit team to make the playoffs in the 2017 calendar year?
That's very possible. Yes.
Because if the Tigers don't do it, because the Pistons ain't doing it, Red Wings ain't doing it.
It's going to be a football town or something.
I don't know. We're going to have some Texas Tech games. They don't fix that defense. That's all they've done.
That's true.
We have done nothing in this segment. Let's go to the mailbag and do a little less than, a little more than nothing.
Talk some Rick and Morty.
Mail time, as always, hashtag AskPOD. When we call for it, PrideOfDetroit.com, you'll find the AskPOD posts if you just want to throw your stuff there in the column, or if you just want to send us a tweet, hashtag AskPOD. Before we get into the mailbag, as always, we read our reviews. Jeremy, you're the review master. Take it away.
We've got our 50th review, guys. We hit the big 5-0.
Oh, yeah.
Today, literally got it in right under the recording time from at JMLewis5213. And for his 5-star review, I started to follow him on Twitter from the Pride of Detroit account. That's our little that present good, to huh? our listeners. Yeah. His review reads, the subject is Pride of Detroit, which is descriptive. Thank you. The review reads, if you're searching for 3 to 5 guys yelling at each other for an hour or so about topics like wrestling, sandwiches, cars, and weird mixed drinks, this is your show. They even manage to talk about the Lions every once in a while. 5 stars.
I think that's about right.
That should almost be the, can you change our description in iTunes to just that?
I do worry sometimes. I know we've had some people who have come up to us and be like, can you guys talk more Lions? But look, man, we can't mess with the sauce. We try. We appreciate that people are up here with the vision, though. We love the people who are down with the vision. As we are going to see in the mailbag, because it is very inside baseball with the Pride of Detroit podcast. So let's start with that. Let's go into the mailbag. Where do we want to start? Do you just want to get right to the guts of the matter, Jeremy?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into it.
We have 3 questions here from Joseph R. Sweeney 5 about the season 3 premiere of Rick and Morty, which is well beloved by the staff. And I don't think we've talked enough about it on the Pride of Detroit podcast. So we'll just say this right now. We're down with Rick and Morty. We're down with it like a 6-cylinder engine.
Oh, we almost made it through without car talk.
I was going to get in there, man. I was going to get in there. So Joseph R. Sweeney 5 has a few questions. So he's just asking, first off, because it came out on April 1st, he's like, is this episode just an elaborate prank? The relative ease of Rick toppling both governments that he was running from. By the way, spoiler alert. I hate spoiler alerts, but I'll do it. And the speed of the script has led some to believe it was a cop-out beginning to throw everyone off. I mean, not really.
No.
That's kind of how these shows go.
That's not their style. I mean, yeah, I think the writers know that the meat and potatoes of the show is them going on like a weekly adventure, and they needed to get back to that.
What do you think this is? Deep Space Nine? They're not going to have long season drawn out bullshit here.
They have season-long arcs, but it's usually not like the A story, you know, it's a like, B or C story.
I guess, but like, yeah, like that's the thing is that the last comedic cartoon I remember doing season-long arcs was like Venture Brothers.
Yeah. And well, that South Park does it now.
South Park does it now too? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't like it with South Park, but yeah.
I don't like it for any TV. That's like the one thing about this prestige TV, unless you're doing like a mini series, but like if you're making like a very long television show and I have to watch every episode to get what's going on, I'm just not, I don't have the patience for it, man.
I'll agree to disagree there.
I think it's because of all the binge watching.
Right. But I can do that for like 10 episodes, right? I could do that for like Westworld. Oh, I can't do that for like The Walking Dead.
Zombies talking. zombies, a little bit more talking.
Yeah, that you can't use that as your one example. Like, what about Breaking Bad? What about Better Call Saul?
I lost.
Even Breaking Bad did a lot of...
Breaking Bad?
It had an overarching story, but almost every episode in Breaking Bad could have stood alone on its own if you only knew what the basic story was. You know, you didn't have to have watched the past 15 episodes to know what was going on.
Yeah, like I want to defend the honor of the episodic format, because I feel like in the past 10 years there has been a massive assault to destroy the episodic format in favor of prestige and long storylines. And it's nice to kick back. Like, I like old TV shows. I like kicking back every now and then with an episode of Miami Vice just in the middle of a season. You know, all the parts are still kind of in place. There's maybe some storylines that are like, as you say, B or C storylines that are kind of getting picked up on. But sometimes I don't want to have to watch everything in sequential order, because not every episode's good. Sometimes I just want to skip ahead.
I'm going to just have to bite my tongue here because
we got more Rick and Morty shit. So we gotta move on with this. Who else is excited for Pickle Rick?
Pickle Rick looks pretty great. We'll just have to wait and see, but...
And then, what are the odds McDonald's comes back with that sweet, danky-dank, boom-baddy Szechuan nug sauce?
Pretty good, actually. They're doing a live-action Mulan, and that's what they came up for originally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the cartoon, yeah.
So maybe,
yeah.
Maybe. We can't rule it out.
I've already seen, like, 3 petitions for it.
I saw someone on eBay just selling a picture of the Szechuan sauce.
Yes. Because he smartly knew, like, people after that episode aired are going to be looking to see if they can buy on eBay some Szechuan sauce from McDonald's from 20 years ago.
Okay, when I say McDonald's Chicken McNuggets,
I know, I hit the gong.
In honor of Disney's new movie Mulan, the epic adventure about this cool girl who saves China, McDonald's is offering tender, crispy Chicken McNuggets and a new Szechuan sauce for a taste of the East. Starting Tuesday, get 6 pieces for 99 cents, or 20 pieces for $3.29. And please hurry, or Gong Boy over here may never stop.
Sherlock Loam also asks us, do you guys have any hot takes on the Szechuan McNugget sauce from 1998? So we should probably jump off into that. What do you have? I mean, I don't know. Like, what was the sauce? What was, because Szechuan can mean where the fuck it looked like in that commercial, it looks like just general sour, sweet or sweet and sour or something. I don't think Szechuan, that's like a spicy sauce, right?
I'm not sure. I think in the episode he said something more like a peanut sesame sauce or something like that. But, I mean, you know, like, you can't expect McDonald's to do a legitimate Szechuan sauce. It's probably just like their hot and sour sauce mixed
right,
with...
Right, like, in the late 90s, all of a sudden we're going to come out with a spicy sauce. That's going to be something that people would want on their palates, like North American people, for a wide audience? I don't think so.
A lot of those restaurants, though, are doing that gimmicky food stuff, having like a one-off where they'll throw something out there and see if people like it. Burger King's done like 35 different versions of chicken fingers. They had a Cheetos one at one point.
Yeah.
Chicken fries, chicken rings.
I mean, like we already had the sriracha craze, but look at that. This is illustrating my point that spicy food really doesn't, like, they have to always modify it to really sell it. Look at all the sriracha stuff that people tried when sriracha was the big craze. It was always sriracha mayo. Because they had to use the mayo to, like, dull down the actual sriracha.
No. Sriracha Doritos are legit, though. Sriracha Doritos.
White people think chicken nuggets too spicy. Next question from the Lions Wire. If you could draft only one total player from Michigan State, U of Michigan, or Toledo, which Kareem Hunt would it be?
I'm in a tough position because I think I'm really starting to like Taco Charlton a lot, and more so than, like, if I had Taco there with some of those top linebacker prospects that we were talking about earlier, I would still maybe take Taco, and I know I have an inherent bias and I can't get past it, so Taco's my answer.
You're not wrong. Yeah, I would consider it. I mean, with the exception of Hassan Reddick, there isn't really many linebackers I'd put over Taco Charlton. It isn't just about how good he is as a player. It's how well he fits into the scheme. And what the Lions need right now is a closed end who can play opposite Ziggy Ansah, who can set the edge and occasionally flip inside on passing down. And that's exactly what Taco Charlton is. I mean, that's where he makes his money. I mean, I've been tracking our mock drafts, as you guys know, and more than 10% of the Lions mock drafts have just been Taco Charlton.
Chris, you gonna bring in your Kareem Hunt love before? I mean, we got to get some in there before. No, you're all worn. You must be worn out on the draft stuff.
I am, and I've barely done any of it. Scott Barlow, friend of the show, asks in the MMQB podcast, Quinn said picking different types of defensive players was among the biggest adjustments implications.
Yeah. I listened to this interview. So basically he was saying that, like, you know, he's used to drafting a specific type of player for the Patriots, and the Lions obviously run a significantly different system. And that was his biggest adjustment in the first year. So I do think that was probably the most interesting part of his interview with Albert Breer. I'm not sure what it means. I mean, I think really what it boils down to is just that the Lions run a very different system than the Patriots, and maybe that's why you didn't see them go after a guy like Hightower in free agency. I think it also probably means that anyone who had hopes of moving to kind of a fluid 4-3-3-4 defense, probably not going to happen until Terrell Austin is gone. I can't really tell you exactly what about specific players they're looking for, though. Do you have any insight onto that, Kent?
Sort of. Terrell Austin hasn't been able to run his defense since 2014.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit difficult to get a full handle on it. When he was first hired in, people always talked about him having run a 3-4 before. But when he was an actual defensive coordinator at Florida, he didn't run a 3-4. He ran the same type of defense he's running here. He ran a 4-3 over or under, whichever one you want to call it, where he had a linebacker on the line. You know, that's the type of defense that he's run. It's basically a nickel defense 70 to 75% of the time anyway. This past season, we saw a whole bunch of that big nickel because they didn't have any linebackers, and they had that extra line or nickel. They had that extra safety, rather, that was good in Killebrew and versatile. Austin's scheme relies on its players being able to run multiple roles, being able to do different things, and they haven't had players who can do that. They've had guys who are good at one or two things, and that's it. And that's part of why I think they've been looking at the types of linebackers that they are, the guys that can rush the passer, the guys that can drop into coverage and do everything. That's why they're looking at those type of players. They're trying to rebuild that base. So I don't think the scheme is really going anywhere. I think the ultimate goal is to get back to how 2014's defense looked. Obviously, it won't be the same because we don't have, you know, the same players. We don't have any Sue. We don't have 2014 Levy. You know, it's going to look similar to that schematically.
Just got to get the players now.
As long as they don't come up with some stupid name for it. Was it the free hurt defense they had back in 2014?
Right. Yeah, they tried out a bunch of different names. I think that's probably the one that stuck the most, but didn't last long.
Paulo H. asks, have you tried Brazilian food?
Random question. Brazilian steakhouse. I don't know if that's really legitimate
Brazilian
food, but
Brazilian barbecue, Brazilian steakhouse. I think that's how most North American audiences would encounter Brazilian cuisine, right?
Right, but probably not that representative. I doubt they're
sure
that if you're in Brazil, you're getting slabs of meat to your table, just shaved off one at a time. But Brazilian steakhouses are the bomb. Shit, I would go there every night if I could afford it, and I cannot.
I really haven't had Brazilian any cuisine, either the steakhouse or anything else. I will tell you, though, instead, what I did have the other day for the first time. I know our sandwich list cast is way behind us, but I finally had banh mi. The Vietnamese Vietnamese subs with like pork and a bunch of veggies on it. I might have to put it in my top 10 now.
It's delicious.
That good. It's insane. I had it like just the traditional style. It was like with, you know, the cucumber, jalapenos, carrots, cilantro, and that really savory kind of sweet pork. Is it like a pork belly or something? I'm not quite sure. Either way, it's that unique kind of pork, but that all on that kind of, you know, toasty French roll. That was really good. I would go back again to have it. As the one remaining person who represents Team Sub, I full-heartedly give banh mi a...
one remaining? You've always been the only one.
I've been the only one. I thought at one point I might have. Yeah, I don't know. I try. But yeah, no, I'm sorry. I haven't. Brazilians, I think that's next on my list. That and like, I've never had like Slavic cuisine. I've never had like borscht. Mm. I think I would like to try that sometime.
Well, if you're coming out to LA, you're going to get your opportunity to eat just about anything you want. That's that.
We haven't
to
told
me,
the people if, about if, that yet. Keep that low. Keep that low. Big news on the way. I just want to make sure all my ducks are in a row first. I'm sorry.
See, I wish I could give any food takes, but I can't eat anything. I have food restrictions. I can't eat any good food. Anything that's good, I probably can't have.
Oh, that sucks.
Oh,
it does suck.
Maybe you can't be a permanent member of this podcast because we talk about food all the time.
A lot. Yeah.
I can sit there and be jealous.
Josh LaFon asks, if you could pick any player from any era that would immediately make Detroit Super Bowl contenders, who would said player be and why?
Ray Lewis, maybe?
That's a toughie. Ray Lewis is a good answer.
Joe Schmidt.
I like that answer.
Joe Schmidt, that's what we'll do. We'll stay Lions.
Oh, we're going way back.
Way back. Joe Schmidt. Jeez. What, 10 or 11 time Pro Bowl or something like that? How many did he go to? Like a million?
I feel like when you go that far back, though, like you put him in today's NFL and he's just going to get embarrassed.
Nah, he'll be fine. 10 time All Pro, 10 time first team All Pro, 10 time Pro Bowler.
Honestly, I'd like a running back. I almost want to say
running back.
I'm not going to say Barry Sanders.
Ooh. No, you'll like this man. You'll like this one. Tomlinson, man. Tomlinson in Cooter's offense.
There you go. Yeah, I like LaDainian Tomlinson a lot. That would be not a running back, but also Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, that Lawrence Taylor was high on my list.
One of those two, either LaDainian Tomlinson or Lawrence Taylor.
I mean, I've said this a million times on the podcast. I'm just in love with elite pass rushers.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that can raise your defense more than any other position. And so, yeah, give me LT. Give me someone who's going to get to Aaron Rodgers and actually take him down, not by the face mask. And, yeah, this defense would look a lot better.
Just if our Sweeney 5 had one more question. Bonus. What was the best part of Gronk's cameo at WrestleMania? Do you think the female security guard was actually part of the cell? Jeremy, this is football related.
No, it isn't.
Gronk was at WrestleMania. That's all you really need to know. Now we'll move on to a totally not WrestleMania question. Blake Berry asks, what was the best part of WrestleMania in 1 minute or less, please?
You son of a bitch.
Again, ahead, Ryan's not here. Yeah, Ryan's not here. So.
No, go ahead. It was a special occasion. We're not going to talk about WrestleMania next week.
You don't know that.
No, we aren't.
Yeah, it's going to be out of fashion by then, unfortunately. We're just going to have to get our takes off on Twitter. I think that, man, the best part of WrestleMania, the show started so well, but it just kind of fell off. Without doing any spoilers, because we got dinged for that last time, I would say, you know, the first two to lead the night off, Shane O'Mac and AJ Styles, like that right there, that match right there is why AJ Styles is the best wrestler on the goddamn planet. And Shane O'Mac can still hit those big spots. It was very fun, very gif-able, great way to start the night. Some of the wrestling fans were a little smarmy about it, but you know what? That's fine. That happens. Whatever. They can be cynical. I don't care. That was fantastic. So was Jericho and Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. Chris Jericho, probably one of the best heels of all time. And it's fantastic looking back on his career and the fact that he still has a Y2K themed entrance. Back when Y2K was a thing. Yes, I see the timer, Jeremy. I'm done. That's
okay. Wow, you got it.
The one thing I wasn't, yeah, I'll just use my last 5 seconds. The one thing that I wasn't thrilled with was Taker Reigns. Not that I hate Taker, but you can probably ask me on Twitter why I had a beef with that.
Look at that. 1 minute and 11 seconds.
I'm sure you started 11, it early, 10. Too. You started it early, too, so I just got in there.
Not true.
You know, I could have ended the show with a John Cena right there, but we want to retire that. We want to start putting in different music at the end, right?
Yeah, we do have to come up with, like, another outro.
Like, I love doing the John Cena thing, but it's also an incredibly old meme at this point, and it has gotten, like, stale as stale can be. It still makes me giggle every time we do it, but I'm not... Look, man, you got to evolve or die.
It's true. Like, we could... I don't know. Like, I feel like we also might have to come up with something that isn't Toto's Africa next year.
No. Ken, get in here and help me out.
I like it, man. I like it. I hope we stick with it at least for another year. Until it gets boring. And until that song actually starts to grate at my earlobes when I hear it, I'm gonna keep sticking behind Africa, man.
Grate at your ears like an Evanescence song.
I have a soft spot for Evanescence. Not that they're good.
Oh,
don't get me wrong.
God.
No. Let me explain. Not that it's good, because it ain't. When I was in the service, I was a cryptology expert. I worked in spook shits. We had to have like cover music for our stuff. So we had to play music loud so that nobody could hear our stuff if they were walking by. And that was right as their first album came out, or right after, I think. And that was one of the ones we had. It's one of the only CDs that we were actually asked to turn off. Like we actually had been told. I think that somebody really hated Merle Haggard. I remember that they wanted us to turn Merle off. And then some real pop crap that they were playing. But I remember Evanescence was one of the ones that we got asked to turn off and not play again.
Well, we'll end the show on that. We'll end the show on a brief glimpse of this bullshit, because I'm already firing it up and I hate all of you. We'll be back next week. As always, Pride to Detroit, PODcast, @PrideToDetroit on Twitter. And see you, Starside.